Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello out there, and welcome to the Danny
and Rihanna Show. This is Danny Pena, Rihanna's husband.
And this is Rihanna Emanuel Pena, Danny's wife. And Danny, we had quite the weekend, and it's the reason why this episode is going up late, a little bit late on Wednesday night / Thursday morning. What were we out doing all weekend, Danny?
It was Summer Game Fest, Xbox Game Showcase, and also Ubisoft. Every other company had events here locally in Los Angeles. So yeah, but the main event was Summer Game Fest. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we got to go to the press conference at the YouTube Theater. Mm-hmm. That was day one. And then after that,
Playdays.
We went to Playdays, where we get hands-on with all the games from the indie side, AAA, from different publishers. And it was a lot of fun. A lot of people from around the world that were here in LA. How was your experience so far for you?
My experience at Summer Game Fest, and more specifically Playdays, was great. I haven't been to as many E3s as a lot of the folks that we record with. So my co-host at Wesley Games, or you and your Game Tech Radio crew, have all been to several. I've only been to one E3. And now this is my third Summer Game Fest. So I don't have as much comparison as you all do. And for me, this was fantastic. I absolutely love the way that I Am 8-Bit organizes Playdays, and they make this space really fun and inviting, easy to navigate. They're literally maps on the walls as you're walking around, and you know, giant circles on the ground pointing you in the direction of the things you're trying to find. Mm-hmm. So it makes it really, really simple to navigate. There's food everywhere. There's water. You know, it's easy enough to find a bathroom. Always a place to sit down. And it's just a really comfortable event. And the access that you have to developers and the ability to play their games on site is obviously why we're there. And they do a really great job at that, too. So I think it's fantastically run. I will say, and I don't want to save this for the end because I don't want to end with criticism, but one thing that I personally found challenging is, as a breastfeeding person, that there wasn't a great solution that they were able to come to. So I don't want to name this person, but somebody was really, really kind and replied to an email about me asking if there's a place where I could breastfeed in private, or pump in private. And they did their best to try to find a solution for me. The solution was unfortunately not great. So it was the all-gendered restroom in the main building of Summer Game Fest, or Playdays specifically. And all but one time that I went in there for the entire 4 days, someone was in there. And most of them, it seemed like they were pooping. They were in there for many, many minutes. I couldn't wait any longer. I was about to miss appointments. So I had to go... at one point, I just pumped in the car. So it was an attempt, but you know, definitely progress to be made there. However, previous year, I was pregnant. It was wonderful. Like I said before in the show, they're very accommodating, and I did not feel stressed out at all being a pregnant person. And they did try to accommodate breast pumping, but you know, always progress to be made. And everything else about the event was absolutely wonderful. How did you feel about it?
No, it was good. I think every year gets better. I noticed the layout changed this year.
Yeah, much bigger.
And it was much bigger.
Food was faster.
Yeah, food was faster. But also, the most important thing, you know, the previous years that will go to Summer Game Fest, there was not a lot of area to sit down. And this year, they had tons of places to sit, to relax, to eat. If you want to, like, you know, do a little quick editing, you know, there's a lot of area there. There was also, you know, the media area you could go to, get coffee all that stuff. And it was just easy to find things, like easy to find your appointments. You know, typically at E3, I will go check my email to see where the company is going to be located, you know, and it was just painful because sometimes it's like far from my other appointments. It's really, really random. This one, because of the size, it's a lot easier to go to point A to point B. It was like super easy for me and for everybody else, you know, so I never got lost. I got to all my appointments. I think maybe there was one that I missed because I went to get food during lunchtime, and I think everybody else went at the same time, so the line was very long. And I didn't know that the pizza spot was a lot faster than the food trucks.
So the year before, the pizza spot had the really long line. This year, they had them all pre-made, so it was a lot faster. Yeah.
Oh, it was smart. It was smart.
It was a really good adjustment. Yeah.
Great pizza, too. It was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I had pizza several times.
Overall, it was great. You know, I had a good time. You know, sometimes I'll take a little break because what I did this time, I will go to my appointments 15, even 20 minutes earlier. So sometimes they will let me do my appointments early. So what I would do is I will go to the bar. You know, in the morning, they don't serve drinks like that. They'll only have like juice, water. But then after 12, I will go and just talk to the bartenders. Like, they were really nice. And they would ask me questions about the camera that I had or the game that I got to check out. You know, it felt very welcoming, you know, when going to this event. Everyone was very helpful. Any questions, people right away will help you out as much as they can. You know, it's not going to be perfect, but overall, it was great. In my experience, it was great.
Yeah, I think one thing that we as What's Good Games noticed would be helpful is more places to record, like maybe just drop in spaces with the Summer Game Fest branding. I know there was a station set up last year inside one of the coffee shops on that campus. And then this year we sort of found a corner within the Playday space. But yeah, I mean, we really want to represent the event and, you know, have some of the action going on in the background. So any kind of like pods or, you know, suggested angles for recording while in the space would be really cool because they do such a good job designing everything. We really want to show it off in our content. So I hope to see more improvements next year. I'm sure there will be Jeff Keeley, who we're so grateful runs the show. He's very good at taking feedback and making sure that people feel like they're being heard and making the show the best it can be. So I look forward to seeing like how many things will be improved and different next year because they knocked it out of the park once again, even better than the last. So yeah. Besides,
Can I show a quick picture?
Sure.
This is behind the scenes stuff for our video people. So this is the green carpet at the Xbox event.
Okay, yeah, this is separate from Summer Game Fest. But this is the Xbox showcase. Yeah.
But this was cool. This is me at the green carpet. Also, for those that don't know, this is when you go into the Xbox press conference, they'll have, like, you know, and everybody take pictures. We got to see Phil Spencer,
Sarah Bond.
He was there. Also, Sarah Bond.
Aaron Greenberg. Right here.
Aaron Greenberg.
All the buddies.
Yeah, it was cool. And of course, this is my favorite moment during Summer Game Fest. They had an event for the 40th anniversary of Tetris, and I got to meet the creator there. And it was cool. We took Baby to this event.
Violet got to meet a bunch of people from not only the Tetris company, but also Nolan Bushnell.
He was there.
There was a really fun moment where he looked at her and said, "Look, I'm Santa Claus." And he played with his very long white beard. And Violet was, and starts, yeah,
she got
smiling and cheering. It was really cute.
Yeah, it was cool. Overall, I really enjoyed this event. All the events that were surrounding Summer Game Fest, it was actually pretty cool seeing everyone.
Yeah, so for folks who aren't as familiar, there's the Xbox showcase that we went to, which was at the National Academy of Theater?
Motion Pictures.
Mm-hmm. National Academy of Motion Pictures Museum. Beautiful space. And their creator and media event was there as well. The theater is wonderful. Very, very comfortable. Really enjoyed that screen, presentation.
That screen was gorgeous. That screen was better quality than the last one that we went for previous years.
I think they could have kicked the sound up a notch, honestly. I usually need to put earplugs in for these presentations, but that one was a little quiet to me.
Well, to be fair, we were all the way to the back.
We were in the back, but it's a theater, so you expect the sound to be good everywhere.
To be fair, that's true. Yeah.
But there was that event. There was also the Ubisoft Forward, which I did not attend in person. I don't believe you did either, Danny, is that right?
No, I had an appointment, but I did check out the games that they had there available for play.
Yes, definitely watch the presentation. And mm-hmm. Ubisoft Forward also had a separate location at the Beverly, is that right? Mm. Where the Ubisoft...
I can't remember the name.
Behind closed doors stuff was. So they had behind closed doors for a number of Ubisoft games off campus, somewhere else besides where Playdays is. So these are two satellite events that kind of hover around Playdays and Summer Game Fest, which is at a City Market Social House in the Fashion District here in LA. So lots of bouncing around, but all of it's pretty close. And as Danny alluded to before, it is not that difficult to get from one thing to another. It sounds like it's better than past E3. So,
Yeah, 100%.
Very well I executed see, all around.
Can I say something about that? I think, and I've been saying it. You know, there was only one year, I remember E3, that had it only in the meeting rooms, but it was in the convention, but there was no booth, nothing. It was just meeting rooms. You just go in, see your game, hands-on, interviews. I did so many interviews there because it was easy. There was not that many people there. It reminded me of that. Summer Game Fest, a lot smaller, easy to walk around, easy to talk to people. Like, I saw so many people at the same time, multiple times during the whole week. And, you know, we'll go to the event, to the appointment, get to play games. You know, I wasn't late at all. And if there is, they'll let you in still, you know, but I'll still do my interviews. One thing I do like is previous years, you could hear the noise and the music loud when I do interviews. This year, better locations for interviews for developers, execs that they want to present their game. Or if they want to do like a presentation, like I got to check out Dragon Age. That was like in a private room in the back at the EA booth. And it was super quiet. All I was hearing was just the game and the person presenting. So it was a lot easier. Yeah. Again, better layout than last year, 100%.
Yeah, they definitely stepped up even further from the first year in person.
Sure.
To making sure things are as soundproof as possible. One thing that I also noticed as we start to get into the bulk of this episode, which will be sort of trends we noticed across Summer Game Fest 2024. And I want to just give a quick note. We're not going to be talking about all the games we saw. We'll do that on our own channels. Go check out Gamertag Radio. Good. Check out What's Good Games. We'll talk about it ad nauseum over there. But for the event itself, one of the trends I noticed was there are a lot of embargoed presentations and hands-off demos. So if I go through and I count, I had 5 hands-off presentations for games that I was hoping to play, but definitely understand why a developer would choose to have a designated person running the show rather than giving the controls over to someone from the media or the press who might accidentally, you know, run into an invisible wall or glitch something out and ruin the experience and you know, keep time, spend time for them to fix it. So I understand why, but there were a lot of hands-off presentations, which was a little disappointing. You want to play the games, right? You want to be able to tell people how fun it is when it's in your hands, what they can expect when they go to make a decision about whether they're going to purchase or invest their time in a game. And when something's hands-off or just a video with talk track over top of it, makes it really hard to get a good representation for that game and that experience. But for those things that were hands off, I'm assuming we're going to get another chance to try it ourselves before we make our official recommendations for people to, you know, jump in or save it for another date. What's a trend that you noticed across everything we saw at Summer Game Fest?
Yeah, one thing about the embargo, I totally agree with you. And I had a conversation with a certain person from a certain company, and they mentioned why they did that. It's because there's so many games that week that they don't want to, like, you know, lose the, you know, the coverage, and we'll get lost. And it happens multiple times at E3 and previous events, you know, because there was just so many content out there, you know. So I think this was smart. This is the first time for me out of all the years I've been attending summer events. This is my 18th or 19th year, minus the the 2 year break that we have from from in person. Usually when I go to an event, I'll post a content right away. But this time, I think like maybe 90% of my coverage was all embargoed, all of them. So that was very interesting trend that I noticed. And I think it is smart. I think it will let that out when everything just calms down and everybody posting their coverage. I think it's smart.
I understand that from a perspective of a marketer, you want to have your own moment for whatever it is you're presenting and not to take away moments from other folks, right, from other properties. However, for smaller outlets, knowing that a lot of folks in the media and especially journalists are short-staffed right now after many, many rounds of layoffs all across the industry, it's really difficult to keep track of all of those dates and times. And when I say that they are like stacked and staggered on top of one another, like there are people who have whole spreadsheets attempting to track all of the different embargo dates for the things that we saw at Summer Game Fest. And we want to adhere to them. We want to lean into the marketing plan. We want to make sure that everything gets its proper moment. But I noticed a lot of outlets chose to wait until the last embargo to release everything because it was easier. And that almost defeats the purpose, right? If the idea is that things are staggered so that every single game has its moment, you lose that when it's so complicated that many folks just wait until the next Wednesday or the next Friday when the last embargo has lifted. So it's a bit of a catch-22, right? That you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. There's probably another solution that folks will attempt to try out next time. But I did notice that there was a lot of outlets that just chose to put all of their coverage in one day and clear all the embargoes and just sit on things. And that kind of, you know, kind of hurt them a little bit.
I tell you another one before I mentioned the other, the most important trends. I noticed that there was a lot of companies that contacted us really early, which is great. Very helpful. Awesome. This was in February. I think it was my first appointment that I booked. And there was other companies that hit me up like maybe a week or two before the event started. I'm like, I'm already booked. So I feel bad. You know, now if there's any changes, I'll try my best to go and, you know, schedule. But it's, you know, it's hard. So the sooner we get the information, the better and easier to book, you know, so. Now, for the game trends that I noticed, Ree.
Yeah.
Lots of horror games this year. You know, to the press conference, I think that's the most horror games I have seen at a press conference was at Jeff Keighley's Summer Game Fest. It was a lot of different ones. There was like there was a couple ones. It was like 8-player co-op, some solo. I know Blumhouse Games was the big one where they show multiple types of horror games,
some of them cool stuff, like very cool indie developers,
which we'll mention that in a few. But with this one, I love that they have, you know, the usual scary games. They have the first person view, third person view, very story focused, very scary. Now, not everybody like you're not a fan of horror games, but they also have the cozy horror game that I was like, that's pretty cool. I think that will help to get people into the genre by playing those type of games. And I think that's very, very smart.
It described as sort of like Harvest Moon meets Murder Mystery.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah. Now, another thing, Henry, you tell me if I'm wrong. I noticed a lot of RTS games.
Okay, yeah. You're just running right through them. RTS games. I noticed a couple. Was it more than normal years or more?
Well, because it's not only at Summer Game Fest, but also there was a couple at Xbox too.
And there's also like, lots of other shows we're not mentioning that didn't have a live component that we were going to go to. So there's PC Game Show, there's Day of the Devs, the Indie Showcase, there's Devolver, there's like the Mix, there's a lot of different things. So we mentioned, I think, all of them on the last episode. But yes, lots of shows, and you're saying RTS popped up a lot.
RTS, yes. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Now, and before you go, and I think this is important to mention, I love the new way how publishers are investing money into finding new types of games, meaning investing money to developers. You know, right now, the industry has been changing, a lot of layoffs. So now people are just doing their own thing. So seeing, you know, Blumhouse Games and also Outer Sloth,
which is one of the things I was going to mention. Inner Sloth. the publisher for Among Us, which a lot of folks have heard of, famously known as the game that AOC, Andrea Ocasio-Cortez, played on Twitch in order to raise money for, I can't remember what it was for.
It was more for people to register to vote.
So voter registration. Mm-hmm. The Among Us publishers created a fund born out of all of their financial success to fund other indie games, which you don't hear about that very often, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're making so much money, we want to give some away. And in a world and late stage capitalism where so many companies are, you know, taking the bag and hoarding it, it's really beautiful to see Inner Sloth now creating Outer Sloth in order to share that success and bring up and shine a spotlight on other smaller creators and developers where they have cool ideas and maybe they would have otherwise been overlooked.
I think it was very smart. I really like that trend. Now, they could also take more risks, and you never know. Maybe they will discover a company that will make a game, a studio that will make a game, and it becomes a hit, a huge hit.
Among Us.
Yeah, Among Us is one of them that just blew up out of nowhere, you know. So I love that. And believe it or not, a lot of the AAA studios that make only AAA games, most of the time they copy from a lot of indie developers, like, because they will do something different and they take risks. And when the company takes risks and it becomes a hit, everybody's gonna copy. So for example, you know, this is like a long time ago where we got to see Battle Royale in the early days. I think it was even before PUBG had it was from another game. I can't remember the name of it, but look, PUBG did it, then Fortnite did it, and every other company started doing it. You know, so it's going to be something like that with indie games, I think, in the future, and you know, big studios.
Yeah, in a world where more and more large developers and publishers are afraid to take risk and only making really calculated bets, it's great to see that there's still support and excitement for indie games and developers. So that's a great call out. What else you got before I go?
I'm trying to think of it. Well, I noticed there was a couple of like Elder Ring type games where
this was going to be one of mine.
Oh, it was? Oh, I saw a couple, not a lot. Maybe you saw more, but
yes.
And that's about it for me.
So I'll pick that up where you dropped off.
Okay.
So I am absolutely aware and supportive of the fact that these are all very different games made from very, very different perspectives. They don't all play the same. They don't all look exactly the same. But when you have a screenshot of, let's call it a high fantasy / steampunk character that is, you know, third person standing in front of some Lovecraftian eldritch horror monster, and there's a giant health bar at the top, and they're probably going to slash at it with some dodges and parries and maybe a little bit of magic. That could be describing so many different games right now. And of course, Elden Ring is an incredible game and very inspirational, not at all the first to look like or do what it did. And there are many games that have been in development far longer than Elden Ring's release that are coming out right now, but they are starting to look very similar to me. And that's a tough sell. Just like we see a zeitgeist, you know, 10, 15 years ago with zombie games, then we see a zeitgeist with Battle Royale games. More recently, we've seen a whole lot of extraction shooters. Like, these trends come and go, and the David versus Goliath sort of really punishing bosses and enemies with, you know, heavy emphasis on dodge and parry and counterattacks and timing is having a moment. And that's a good thing. That means there's a lot of people who love those games and they'll have a lot to choose from. For me, it's not my best type of game because I'm not that good at it. So it doesn't appeal to me as much, but there are some in there that are piquing my interest, and I'm really excited to learn more about them. Two that I'll call out really quickly are Naltria The Last Dance, and
Pretty good one.
What was the other one? This looks more like a Persona game in the way the action rolls out, but screenshot wise, let me make sure I get the right name because it was a little bit unusual. This was from the Xbox showcase. Where is it? Xbox showcase. Here's my notes. Claire Obscure : Expedition 33. And this is from Sandfall Interactive, which is, I'm pretty sure, their first game coming 2025. It's sort of like a three-party member active action RPG. Like I said, looks more like Persona in the gameplay, but when you look at a screenshot, a lot of these look the same. So I definitely noticed that trend. Another trend I noticed, which is pretty cool, is Feudal Japan, right? We've had people begging for a Japanese Assassin's Creed game for so very long, and now we know Assassin's Creed Code Red, now named as Assassin's Creed Shadows, is set in Feudal Japan, and you have the shinobi warrior Naoe teaming up with the actual historical figure, the samurai named Yasuke, and you can play either as the traditional Assassin's Creed stalking in the shadows, stealth character focused on movement and tactical takedowns, or you can just bust shit up as Yasuke and go full on action with the giant mace and like curb stomp people. So
he's a beast.
It's pretty cool looking. I'm definitely excited to check out that game, and the fact that you can play most missions as one or the other at will, really, really cool conceit for Assassin's Creed. So there's that game. I also noticed there is the update for Power World. We've heard of Power World. Famously had 2 million concurrents when it debuted, still pretty high up there on Steam. They have a new release coming out with that Sakurajima update. Also the finals, they're looking at doing another update, and we have played this game a little bit, but we haven't talked about it on the show. They're doing another Japanese feudal inspired update where they're changing the levels in order to look like different temples and things from Feudal Japan. So there's kind of like a little miniature moment, I would say. Obviously, it's a style aesthetic that has been around for many decades, but it's cool to see that popping up here and in different games and totally different genres, right? The PAL world versus Assassin's Creed versus the finals have very little in common game-wise, but it's neat to see this through line. One other trend that I'd noticed, and we talked about this already sort of with Blumhouse Games and Outer Sloth coming from Inner Sloth, is the rise of indies. And I just want to take a moment and comment on the state of the industry and where we can go from here. Lots and lots and lots of talented people across all different types of positions in game dev and game coverage are looking for work. Many of them are very close personal friends of ours, and they're all far too talented to not have a career that is stable and can sustain their families. Where we are right now, a lot of those folks are figuring it out, coming together and making new projects. And what I love seeing and what I hope is the stable future for indie games and developers is going straight to where the money is and skipping the publisher step when they don't need it. There are a lot of indie games that they have a vision. They know exactly what they want to make. They know exactly who it's for. They know how to speak to them. They're great at community building. They're some of the best community building people I've ever witnessed in the indie game space, Inner Sloth being one of them. And they can absolutely benefit from a traditional marketing and publishing budget, but if it's not there for them, they can keep moving and working without it. And as somebody who works in marketing and publishing, this is me saying that, you know, the roles that I usually take on, if you can't find a way to fund it, make your game. Like, just make your game. And the community will do their best to find you if you know how to speak to them and integrate them into your process. So that's very exciting to me. I hope there is a future where all of these individual publishing houses, folks like Annapurna and Devolver, who are fantastic at curating really, really specific types of experiences that fit their portfolios. I want to see more of that. I want to see more Blumhouses. I want to see more Outer Sloths. I want to see more indie publishers really rising to the surface and finding mid-size budgets to fit these indie games and giving folks like Strange Scaffold, for instance, a chance to put a game out that eventually gets optioned for a movie because that shit is cool. And I want to see more of that. Like, indie spaces are where we see, as you said, Danny, the most innovation, the most risks, and the most original ideas. And they need to exist. And I'm excited to see a future where we get even more of them. And hopefully the big publishers can catch on and figure out a way to spread the wealth a little better.
Yeah. Yeah. I could definitely see. I have a feeling that we're going to see more publishers doing this, like investing more money on just working with indie studios. It's better. Again, take that risk. We need change. I think this could be the change that we might see in the future.
Yeah. I mean, at the Summer Game Fest showcase, Jeff opened the show with a graphic showing all of the top selling and performing games of 2023. And guess how many indies were up there? It was like 90% small teams.
Yep.
So
new games too.
And new games, new IP. So it just goes to show, sure, bets are great, and we all love a big meaty game that, you know, we can get excited for, like, hello, Black Ops, hello, Gears of War, but it's also exciting to see some new stuff and to bring new ideas and fans into the genres that we already love. One last trend that I noticed that is very small trend, I guess it's just me being excited for these two particular projects, but we're getting a couple of games that have already been out and have a really big fan base releasing physical copies. So the first one I'll mention is really small. It's Balatro. It is a poker roguelike game that I've been playing nonstop this weekend, whenever I can, on my Steam Deck. And it's coming out for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series S and X, and Nintendo Switch in physical form, which is really fun. I'm probably going to buy a copy for my mom. Mom, if you're listening to this, I'll let you know when it's going to be expected at the house. And the other one that I know you're really excited about, Danny, is for Alan Wake 2. You want to tell us about this physical release?
Yeah. So let me see if I can find it. I can show it here. But yeah, the Alan Wake physical release is coming out, I believe, later this year. All right. So this is from Limited Run Games. They have the Alan Wake collection that is coming out later this year. It costs $199, and you can get it for the Xbox Series X, S version or the PS5 version. Now, let me show you pictures of this.
Yeah, let's see what's in that bad boy.
And this is the actual picture of... So in there, it's, you know, the cover. This is the hotel keychain and Angel Lamp. That's the one that...
The Switch
uses for like puzzles. And it's going to be a booklet which has over 160 pages of content, including characters, environment concepts, everything, and also pins. It comes in, and of course, the actual game. So I like this idea. And the reason is really that I like this idea is typically in the past, a company will have the physical collector's edition and that's it. Sometimes they make too many copies. So you go to the store months later and it's still there, you know. So with this one, the way how Limited Run Games do their thing, and also I am 8-bit, how the way how they do the physical is you order from now to a certain date and they make those copies. It's not like it's already made. You get what I'm saying? So it's right. First comes first serve.
Some manufacturing costs.
Yeah. I think this is the future for physical games in the future, where the company will release a digital game. They could even say Shadow Drop, but there's no physical, it's only digital. And then later, the physical version will come out where you could pre-order. If you're really a hardcore fan, this is the way to go. Like, for example, Hi-Fi Rush only came out digital. Mm-hmm. They're also releasing a physical like this. You go and pre-order and so on. So,
yeah.
Yeah. This is good. I'm excited.
Very exciting stuff.
Very excited. I was clapping. Yeah.
Yeah. When they announced miniature trend, because, you know, there's only a couple examples, but I like it and I want to see more of it. And as you said, Danny, it's great that people can claim it, and then it gets made so that there is less waste, because of course we don't want that. And I think this is a really great solution for people who really want to be able to feel and hold and save their game forever. And I'm glad that it's working out for both the fans and for the people making the stuff.
Yeah, so you have until July 21st to pre-order.
You mean I have until, do you want this as like your Father's Day gift? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I didn't say that. I was just talking to the fans. I was looking at the camera. You have up to July 21st.
All right. We'll figure out who's paying for it, because I know it's going to get into this house one way or another.
It's all good. It's all good. No, but I bought the Tetris Effect Connected physical version. Mm-hmm. It was pretty cool. I was like, you know what? I love this game so much. Let me just buy it. And I bought it.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. I have it in the back right here.
Yeah. And if you haven't checked out our episode talking about digital versus physical media, I don't know if the little thing will be somewhere around here. We can make sure we link to it so you can check that episode out too, because it's a really great conversation and related to this little mini trend that we're talking about now. But that's all I got for trends I noticed during the summer of gaming. We did not talk about another event that I don't think either of us got to in person, IGN Live, which happened concurrently with Summer Game Fest at a separate location and had other games available for play, but focused a lot more on entertainment. So movie and TVs and things like that. Movie and TV shows and things like that. But if anybody in our audience checked out IGN Live or saw coverage on it, let us know what you thought looked cool. I know there was a booth for a client that I used to work with. Shout out to Scopely. Hope everything went great with Summer Guys. And we had a lot of friends who work over there, and sounded like they were really excited and really pleased with the turnout for this first time event. And maybe hopefully it can be even bigger next year. So shout out to you guys over there at IGN. And yeah, anything else, Danny?
I think that's about it so far. I think this is a great conversation to talk about, like, the behind the scenes of attending an event like Summer Game Fest. I think this is great. Hopefully we can do more of these in the future.
Yeah.
And can't wait for the next episode.
One other thing I wanted to say, thank you to all of the folks who walked up to us and told us they are fans of the show and listen to the Danny and Rihanna show. We're not expecting that
at all.
It was such a surprise. So apologies if it seemed like you all caught us off guard, but that was so heartwarming and so encouraging, because we just expect no one to listen to this except our families. So really appreciate the support and the viewership and the listenership, and you know that you're enjoying the content. So reach out to us. Let us know other stuff you want us to cover. If there's anything else you want to hear us have a conversation about, you know, mom and dad have a pretty packed schedule, but we always make time for each other, and we really want to make time for this, and it's important. And hearing that it's being well received and getting your feedback in person was even more motivation to keep going. So thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you, everyone. And make sure to subscribe. If you're not a subscriber, let's say you discover the video, hey, this is your opportunity to subscribe on YouTube. Or if you find us on any other podcast app, this is your opportunity to follow us, post a review, send us comments through the app. Also, if you are listening on Spotify, we have weekly polls that, you know, depending on the topics that we have on our show, you could go and answer that poll. Sometimes, you know, we might ask a question, hey, do you agree, disagree, or whatever. It might be different type of questions there, but participate, be part of it. And we could also continue having that conversation on our next future episodes of the Danny and Rihanna show. So, yeah. So thanks, everyone, for supporting us.
Yes.
And listening to the show. And until next time, we're out. Take care.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.